All right, let's call this meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order. Please let the record reflect that it is 3:34 p.m. on Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. Please let the record also reflect that we have a quorum. We have Senator Stevens, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, Senator Machicki will join us later, and Senator Bishop is excused. Staffing today is Committee Aide Betty Tangeman, LIO Moderator Nate Williams, and Chris Dickrell online from Records. Thank you to all of you who make the committee go round. Please turn off your cell phones. Today's agenda consists of two oil and gas-related governor bills. We're going to start with a SB 61 oil and gas lease DNR modify net profit share. This is the second hearing. We first heard the bill on February 10th. And then we're going to go on to open up SB 62. All right. Joining us today for SB 61 via teleconference line are Johnny Meza, Ryan Fitzpatrick from DNR Division of Oil and Gas. I'd like to thank Mr. Meza and Mr. Fitzpatrick for their quick email response to our questions from last committee meeting. We would appreciate it if one of you could start with a recap of the bill and then provide us with an overview of the information from that email. Mr. Meza, you know the drill. If you could please jump in and begin.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Johnny Meza from the Department of Natural Resources. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair Rivak, we provided the committee some information related to questions, follow-up questions that were asked during the hearing back in February. They were related to information as to the three cases where the department granted royalty modification. And as we mentioned during the presentation, there were 8 applications for royalty modification, 2 of which were denied, 3 of which were withdrawn by the applicants, and the remaining 3 were granted, approved by the department. In this approval, the department had issued a written findings and determination in a preliminary fashion to allow for public comment and offered the legislature a presentation to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Also, we provided in that letter additional information about the production that came from those fields receiving the royalty modification, and additionally, the revenues to the state in its role as resource owner, specifically royalty and net profit share payments where applicable.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Do we have any questions from committee members? All right. Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I think Mr. Meza covered the information. I apologize. This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, DNR, for the record. No, I think Mr. Meza covered the information that we'd provided to the committee. Of course, Mr. Meza and I are happy to answer any other questions that the committee might have as well.
So maybe you could explain to us and to the public, in as simple terms as possible, why this would be beneficial for the state of Alaska to modify royalty or net profit share leases.
Certainly, Chair. And again, this is Ryan Fitzpatrick for the record. I think the intent behind this bill is to be able to encourage development of resources that would otherwise remain stranded. You mentioned royalties, and so just for the record, I want to note that currently the Alaska statutes as they stand do allow the Commissioner of Natural Resources to modify royalty rates under three different scenarios. That is to encourage new production from a field or pool that hasn't previously been produced before, to extend the life of existing production from a field or pool in the event that per barrel costs are increasing, or to restore production from a field or pool that has ceased production and is currently shut in. So as the statutes currently stand, those are the three scenarios under which the statutes allow the DNR commissioner to modify a royalty rate. What this bill would do is primarily two things. Number one, it would allow for a fourth condition, which would allow for royalty modification or for potentially modification of net profit shares. And that condition would be in the event that a field is producing, and so sort of like the second scenario, field is already producing, it hasn't shut in yet. But the additional scenario would be where additional capital investment is required to increase marginal production from the field. And so hypothetically, the scenarios would be something along the lines of additional drilling or additional drilling pads, enhanced oil recovery projects, secondary or tertiary recovery. Projects like that, that if those projects were not economic on a standalone basis, but could be made economic through royalty or net profit share modification, it would encourage that additional investment and the additional production. And then the second second objective of the legislation would be to allow net profit the modification of net profit shares under the same regime as royalty modification is currently allowed in statute. And so that would be one of the three bases that we already discussed, or potentially the fourth additional basis that this bill would add.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. You mentioned enhanced recovery efforts. Could you simplify that? What I hear you saying is that as an oil field is produced over time, it becomes harder and more expensive to recover the oil. Is that what you're saying?
Chair, yes, and this is, again, Ryan Fitzpatrick for the record. Yes, and I apologize. That's maybe something of a technical term that sometimes gets used. But, yes, generally as an oil field is produced over its life, generally you see decline in production, and certainly we've seen that in, you know, all fields up on the North Slope throughout Alaska. That's a common feature of oil fields throughout the world. Initial production is high, but as the reservoir is produced, the amount of oil recovered on a daily basis drops over time. There are methods that producers can use to either slow the decline of oil production or to temporarily increase production. Generally, the first choice of method would be to inject water into the oil field, but typically done at the beginning of the life of the oil field. But there are other methods that could be used as well, such as the injection of gas, the use of miscible injectant, polymer flooding, a whole host of arrays that can be used to increase production from the field.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. And it's DNR's position that fields will become uneconomical in current development is the reason you're requesting this?
Yes, Chair Rivek. And again, this is Ryan Fitzpatrick for the record. Yes, over time, any oil field can potentially become economic. We see that, you know, throughout the world where oil fields that have been producing for, you know, long periods of time, eventually as the oil production declines, the revenues from the field are no longer sufficient to meet operating expenditures along with other financial commitments of the field. So hypothetically, yes, as an oil field declines in production, it is possible that the modification of royalty rates, the modification of net profit share rates, at the point at which the field is no longer economic because of the decline in revenues due to the decline in production. A modification in those circumstances could extend the life of the field. The field would not shut down at the same time that it might otherwise do so, and we might gain a couple of additional years of production. Similarly, the new scenario that we've contemplated surrounding increased capital expenditures being a basis for modification, that could similarly lead to the extension of life of a field as that increased production allows for increased revenues. And so that might be another way in which this bill, we believe that this bill could help to increase production over time from certain fields that might otherwise be economically disadvantaged.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is all new to me, but I'd be interested in knowing how often do you approve or deny these requests? Is this the number you gave us of two denied, three approved? There was another number I missed there, but is this like in a year's time, or do you approve or deny a lot more requests?
Senator, Senator Stevens, through the chair, Ryan Fitzpatrick, for the record. The figures that I believe that Mr. Meza shared with the committee were that since the statute was first enacted in, I believe, 1995, the Department of Natural Resources has had eight applications for royalty modification. So that eight figure goes from 1995 to the current current date, so approximately 25, 26 years. So in those 26 years, we've received eight applications for royalty modification. Of those, three of those applications were withdrawn after the applicants had filed the application, but before a decision was made on the application by the departments. Two of those applications were denied by the department in published findings. And then finally, three of the applications were granted by the department. As you can see, you know, eight applications over 26 years. This is not something that you see a lot of applications on an annual basis, but generally it's something, you know, involves a fair amount of review work. So there is a fair amount that goes into these applications.
Well, thank you. That helps to understand. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. And I noticed that of the three that were modified were substantially lucrative to the state. Could you walk us through the process? What happens when somebody applies to DNR for a modification? What's the internal processes?
Certainly, Chair Ryavak. And again, for the record, Ryan Fitzpatrick, DNR. DNR has a current review process for a royalty modification if one were to be received by the department. Generally, the section within the Division of Oil and Gas, which is a subset of the Department of Natural Resources, the section within Oil and Gas that Mr. Meza and I are members of, Mr. Meza, of course, is the manager, but the commercial section within Division of Oil and Gas is generally charged with the review of those applications when they're received. The review process can vary depending on the application, whether it's, you know, a larger field or a smaller field, a larger operator or a smaller operator. But generally, those reviews are very in-depth no matter which field that we're talking about. I believe the last one that the department reviewed, the review process itself took approximately 10 or 11 months. So it was quite a long review period. When the application is received, the department will review the application initially, review the information that's submitted with the applicants. Generally, I don't expect that we'd expect to see all of the information submitted along with the application that the department may want to review. And so even after that application is received, there's generally back and forth with the applicant. The department has the authority to request additional information from the applicants. And if that if the information isn't received by the department, the lack of that information can be used as a basis for denying the requested modification. Additionally, and I believe we mentioned this previously, there's authority in the statute for the departments to require or to request the applicant to pay for consultant fees for the department to aid in its review of the application. Generally, those consultants would be the sort of expertise that maybe the department might not have in-house. And so that might be additional reservoir engineering work. It might be financial review based on outside expertise, accountants or members of, you know, the financial industry that might have expertise in financial review. The division wouldn't necessarily have in-house. And so that's definitely been a helpful thing in the past when reviewing these sorts of applications. From there, once the information is received, the department would do its own evaluation, its own economic modeling. And, of course, the primary objective of the evaluation is to determine whether the application meets the statutory requirements for royalty modification. And so that's one of those three scenarios, as we presented. Each of those three scenarios have potentially a couple of different subparts that each application would have to meet. And one of the primary considerations that the department keeps in mind during that review process is that when the legislature passed that statute in 1995 allowing for royalty modification, one of the features of that statute is that there's a heightened burden of proof that an application has to meet in order to be eligible for royalty modification. That is, I believe, clear and substantial evidence. And so we look at that as a requirement that not just the minimum burden of proof has to be carried, but that a heightened burden of proof has to be carried by the applicant in order to become eligible for royalty modification. Once that review is finished, the commercial section would then brief the head of Division of Oil and Gas, the Commissioner of Natural Resources. There may be additional review work that management requests that we conduct, additional information that we gather, and then finally come to a conclusion on the application itself. At that point, the department would prepare and submit a best interest finding that would be published. There's a comment period, a public comment period that opens up upon the publication of that. And the department receives public comments on those sorts of applications. And then in addition, during that public comment period, there is an offer to the legislature for legislative budget and audit to have a hearing on the royalty modification and the draft best interest finding, as well as provide any comments to the commissioner. And then after the public comment period closes, the department has to consider all of the public comments, any legislative comments, and incorporate that into a final best interest finding that's then published as well.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzpatrick. Well, it looks like that there's some oversight by the public in LB&A. It looks like only three of these applications out of eight in history have been approved. Why now? Why the modification now? I mean, we've all seen our throughput decrease pretty drastically in the past few decades. Are we really at that point where they will become uneconomical, or why is the department asking for this now? Anybody who wants to take that.
Senator Chairman Rivak, for the record, my name is Johnny Meza. You are correct in referencing that the declining production from our producing fields may create the possibility that some of those pools may become uneconomic. One of the main goals with this proposed bill by the department is that if by modifying the royalty rate or the net profit share rate for the net profit share leases, we can prevent those declining production from those fields to be abandoned and perhaps ensure that there be continuing production with the ensuing revenues to the state through royalties and net profit shares, in addition, of course, with associated taxes, then that is one of the main goals of this bill, to provide this additional flexibility to the DNR commissioner as another lever whereby modifying those parameters, we could encourage continued or additional or incremental production that might otherwise be closer to abandonment or shutting some wells due to disadvantages from an economic perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Meza. Any other questions? Any other questions to any of the members online? Thank you. Okay. I do want to hear real quick. You know, this is a bill that was presented by DNR. This is requested by the agency. We've heard all from the agency, and I don't want to leave out the industry. And so I've invited Ms. Kara Moriarty from AOGA here. And Ms. Moriarty, if you could just offer any of your input very quickly, we would appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Senator Rivak, Chair, and thank you for the invitation, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. We are the professional trade association that does represent the majority of explorers, producers, the refineries, and the pipeline company in the state of Alaska. We have reviewed Senate Bill Senate 61, which, as has already been described, would authorize and allow the commissioner of DNR to potentially modify net profit share leases in cases where it is determined that oil and gas production would otherwise become uneconomic. And we do, even though this is not our bill, we do support this piece of legislation. You know, as for many, I think it's just worth reminding that obviously 2020 was an unprecedented year for the oil and gas industry and many industries. Even with the global pandemic, we also had a price war that was happening even before the pandemic hit. And then, of course, you know, the whole world turned upside down about a year ago. For the first time since, you know, really since production in Prudhoe started, drilling on the North Slope virtually stopped. We had no drilling rigs in Prudhoe for the first time in history. And obviously, we know the sector lost thousands of jobs. And while the prices are rising and production in Alaska has largely rebounded to where we were before, obviously there's still effects of 2020. So while this is not a new concept to allow potential modifications to NPSL leases, this is not the first time this idea has been brought forward. It does feel like the timing might be right because we do need to do whatever we can to make sure our fields are economic and the state's fiscal regime remains competitive. As it's been described, Senate Bill 61 does provide an additional regulatory tool in the state's toolbox to incentivize and grow production. I think Mr. Fitzpatrick from DNR did a really nice job discussing how, you know, modifying current royalty rates for oil and gas oil and gas leases is not easy. It does not happen overnight. There is very much a rigorous standard of proof, and the economics absolutely have to warrant a change, and it has to be in the best interest of the state. So allowing NPSL leases to go through the same type of process could be a very necessary and effective tool, providing flexibility in managing different cost structures, market dynamics, and project economics. So to us, we see this truly as an additional tool in the toolbox that would not be, this lever would not be easily pulled. It certainly, as is already the practice with royalty modifications, they are very much on a case-by-case basis, but it does provide the option for DNR to work with the industry of any particular development. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we want to see as much production as possible. It's good for the state. It's good for the economy. It's good for jobs. And we know that it's important for all Alaskans. So, again, thank you for the opportunity, Chairman Reback, to officially put on the record that we do support this piece of legislation and encourage its passage.
Well, thank you for your time and for all you do. It certainly has been of a great benefit to the state of Alaska that we have our wonderful resources. And, again, we appreciate your time. We're going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Do we have anyone online who would like to testify? Anyone on the telephone who would like to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. All right, we're going to set this aside and we're going to move on to SB 62. The next item on today's agenda, Gas Leases Renewable Energy Grant Fund, which is also a governor's bill. We will start with a presentation by Haley Payne, DNR Deputy Director of the Division of Oil and Gas. And on the line for questions, we also have Sean Clifton, DNR Policy and Program Specialist. Ms. Haley, if you could please introduce yourself, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. Yes, thank you. My name is, for the record, Haley Payne, and I am the Deputy Director of the Division of Oil and Gas. Today, I will be presenting SB 62 on gas leases and the Renewable Energy Fund. For this presentation, we'll start with just a general overview of the bill, including its purpose, and any potential challenges, if not permitted, and then we'll move into a more detailed sectional analysis. So with that, we'll advance the presentation to slide 2. So the purpose of this bill is to allow the Division of Oil and Gas to lease and capture revenue from state-owned resources underlying lands restricted to surface use. This bill does not open Ketchumak Bay or any other closed area to surface development. It simply aims only to capture royalty revenue from geology drained through adjacent development on nearby unrestricted lands. With the use of modern drilling technologies, oil and gas may be safely developed from adjacent lands with no impact to the surface of these restricted areas, to include the offshore. The primary benefit of this bill would be increased revenue. Lands with surface use restrictions can still provide revenue in the form of lease sale bids, annual rental payments, and royalties if made available for subsurface only development. The state will be able to protect the land using established regulatory methods while still maximizing the economic recovery of its resources. We'll see if there's any questions before moving on to slide 3.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Please continue.
Thank you. So what happens if we cannot lease? The main concern is the mechanism for collecting royalties. If unleased land is drained from wells on adjacent leases, royalties may not be paid to the state, or that revenue could be diminished. For instance, the wellhead may be located on private lands. This may prevent the state from realizing this revenue unless the remedy is sought through AOGCC for correlative rights. Moreover, leasing is the standard mechanism for establishing a contractual relationship between the state and the developer. Through the lease, the state exercises its authority to comply with mitigation measures, and we also require the sharing of drilling and reservoir data. This data is integral to the state for understanding the extent of our resources. And we can now move on to slide four, unless there's any questions on that.
Questions? Please continue.
Thank you. So as we can see here on slide four, we're depicting a map of the subject area that's going to be discussed in section two of the bill. So the bill seeks to allow gas-only leasing of the subject area while maintaining the surface use restrictions that are currently in place. The offshore state lands in Township 5 South, Range 15 West are shown within the context of the greater Cook Inlet area-wide on the map on the right, and then offered in more detail on the close-up image on the left, as seen in the blue hash mark region. As you can see, the subject area is adjacent to active development on the Kenai Peninsula, including the Seaview unit, which was recently approved by the division in October of 2020. On this left map, I would also like to draw your attention to the Cosmopolitan unit to the north. The offshore leases that are depicted there in olive are all currently being developed from the onshore Hansen pad, which is located on private lands. It's about halfway up the unit along the coastline. This provides an example that shows the successful access of offshore resources without impacting the surface use of these waters.
We do have a question, Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Just help me understand, Mr. Chairman. So they're doing all of this from onshore. How far are these pipelines reaching out into the bay?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, all of these are being accessed from the current Hansen pad for the Cosmopolitan unit. In terms of an actual exact distance on the wellbore for that, that's something that I would need to follow up with the committee on in a follow-up, if that is okay.
Yes, for everybody. I just was interested in knowing that. Thank you.
Yes, if you could please send that information to my office and we'll distribute to members of the committee, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So if I could...
Yes, Senator Stevens.
This is not my field again, but are we finding that we are able to extend these pipelines out farther and farther from shore? I assume that's the case.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, yes, sir. We have found that as modern drilling technologies continue to improve, we are able to safely access resources. The distance from shore would, depend on a variety of factors, including, the depth of the pool within the geology itself. And so, but we do have, examples, as you can see, the current blue hashed area should be well within the current technologies to be able to access from unrestricted surface land.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Please continue.
Thank you. So if we move on to slide number five, we'll actually do the sectional analysis for this bill. So in section one, it seeks to add a new section to AS 3805. It would specify that a statute restricting the surface use of an oil and gas or gas-only lease does not also restrict leasing and development of the subsurface of that area from an unrestricted land. So this general provision is intended to more broadly capture the purpose of this bill and address future surface use restrictions that may be imposed on the state's natural resources. And if there are no questions, we'll move to slide six, which goes into sections two and three.
Please continue.
So here we have AS 3804-184 to be amended to authorize DNR to offer gas-only leases in that area on slide four depicted within Township 5 South, Range 15 West, Seward Meridian. Again, to be clear, there is no right to use the surface of the land, and this would help keep with the original intention of the Ketchumak Bay oil and gas closure area, which was to protect the region's fisheries. Here in subpart B of the statute, it's amended to acknowledge the exemption created by the new subsection H of this bill.
Well, please.
No questions. Please, I would advance to slide 7.
Perfect. Please continue.
Thank you. So on slide 7, we see the changes proposed in sections 4 through 6. Recognizing the unique nature of the area to be leased here, there is a proposal to AS 4245045 to amend to allow the legislature to appropriate revenue from these leases directly to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. The governor recognized in this bill an opportunity to add funds to this account as a part of the all-of-the-above approach to energy sources for Alaska. So this revenue would again be allocated by the legislature and would come from the state's rentals and royalties collected through these specific leases. Such appropriations, of course, would only occur after the required deposits to the Alaska Permanent Fund as required by the Alaska Constitution. The final sections of the bill would provide a bit of housekeeping, just moving language about the Department of Revenue as manager of the fund, and also provide for the bill to be effective immediately.
Well, thank
with that,
you.
We are actually at the conclusion of this brief presentation, so I'd just like to open it up if there's any questions regarding these sections or anything else in general that we can answer.
Well, thank you, Ms. Payne. We appreciate that. Do we have questions, more questions? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sitting at a table with a bunch of oilies, I understand, but I don't really understand some of the issues you're talking about. So we've got a lot of we've got a lot of sites in the middle of out in Cook Inlet. Now, Senator Machicki sent me a note saying that we're talking about extending out to 7.5 miles. Is this replacing, is drilling from shore replacing the need for these big sites out in the ocean? What do you call them? The platforms, yeah. Does this eliminate the need for platforms, or are they still? Will they still be seeing the platforms out there?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I believe this would depend on the location of where the resource is accessed. To my knowledge, you know, we do have resources at this time in more of the Upper Cook Inlet area that would be not proximal to a shore reach. So this bill is really just looking to direct those specific areas that would be close enough and adjacent to an unrestricted surface land that safe and modern drilling technologies would allow us to lease. So the short answer to your question is this may not be a full replacement to any offshore development per se. It's just seeking to allow a small subsurface township to be accessed from somewhere that is capable of such reach at this time.
It just seems like a great goal. Thank you for your comments.
All right. We Senator Keel, I think, had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the presentation. A lot of focus on the Ketchumak Bay area that's specifically called out in the bill. Do I understand the bill to apply, though, to all state land with the surface restrictions? So critical habitat, area like in Gustavus or a state park or perhaps a piece of state land that has a private lease for a lodge. We could do under this bill the subsurface lease on any and all of those. Is that how this works?
Senator Keel, through the chair. So the intention of this bill is to, in the first section one, provide a general framework that would allow some of these more specific designations in the future, should there be a specific LDA that closes or restricts that. At this time, you know, of course, what's always going to bear on it is whether or not the state has the mineral estate and whether or not that mineral estate can be safely accessed from another nearby unrestricted land that is currently belonging to the state. So at this time, this bill is only contemplating the access of the subject area.
Mr. Just a follow-up. that I apologize that I didn't quite understand it. It's a general framework. It applies to everywhere. We're only thinking about this one here. But it does apply everywhere. Was that correct?
Senator Keel, through the chair, yes. So this is looking at addressing future surface use restrictions that may be imposed. And so at this time, the Ketchumack Bay oil and gas closure is a very unique location in terms of its authorization through statute. And so this would just create the opening in case there are future opportunities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I'm just looking at the first part of the slides. It says the main concern is for collecting royalties. If unleased land is drained from wells on adjacent leases, royalties may not be paid to the state, and that revenue could be diminished. So I look at this as a revenue enhancement bill for the state of Alaska, which is a good thing. Because my understanding is that horizontal drilling, did you mention this in your points? Horizontal drilling and the technology is becoming more capable, and this behavior could occur without us knowing. Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, to your point regarding the capabilities of modern drilling technology, yes, it's absolutely correct. To be clear, at this point in time, the state does not contemplate that this is actively occurring, but rather it is going to set the stage for us to be sure that should any pools that are not completely delineated at this time show to actually extend beyond into this area that we don't currently have access to leasing, that we would not have to separately go through AOGCC for an order to protect that revenue. That we could instead have that leased through the proper lease agreement and be able to account for it through the trapped factors, ensuring that the state received its maximum value for the revenue of those lands.
Thank you. Can I just do one follow-up? Okay, so thank you for that. So it's not happening right now, but it could happen, and so we're just preparing for that just to make sure we can maximize the revenue. And then I see on the sections 4 through 6, to allow the legislature to appropriate revenue from these leases to the renewable energy grant fund. So is some of the money then going to go to a designated fund? Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, yes, if the legislature so chooses to appropriate revenues from these leases that could be issued to the renewable energy grant fund, then yes, they would be set to that dedicated fund.
So thank you. This is not happening now. We, per the statute, we would change that?
Yes, that is correct. It is not actively occurring at this time. This bill would enable that in a future occurrence. Okay.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Other questions?
I have one.
Yes, Senator Michicki.
So the only funds that would be deposited into the Renewable Energy Grant Fund are with projects that are associated with this type of a lease. Is that correct?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, yes, that is correct. This bill only would specifically authorize from the leases of this specific area to have monies allocated to the Renewable Energy Fund.
And one more.
Yes.
And although this bill only affects Township 5 South, Range 15 West, that area is an area of interest right now because of the Cosmo and other developments in the area, and there's potential. Do we have seismic in that particular area that looks interesting?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, at this time, The areas of that region are just continuing to be developed, and those pools are being delineated. So we do not have a specific reason at this time to say that this is absolutely going to occur, but simply to allow us, as development occurs within the Kenai Peninsula Anchor Point area, to be prepared that should such pool be delineated, the state is in a position to move forward with leasing those lands.
Thank you. And one last one. So if there were an additional area at some point somewhere in Alaska that may have some potential or someone may be interested in. There would be a separate bill that would just have sort of a Section 3 in it on that specific township and range. Is that correct?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, from my understanding, with the dental provision in place, we would then need to find out if there's a specific closure area or something that's already specifically enshrined for that particular location, and then that particular statute would still need to be amended or modified.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Yeah, just help me understand. So right now, appropriations are deposited in the Alaska Permanent Fund, and this would allow funds to be appropriated or moved into the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. Well, what are those funds used for in the Renewable Energy Grant Fund?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that is a question that I would need to get back to the committee about in more detail. I can speak very broadly about the fact that, you know, the Renewable Energy Grant Fund has been used to fund various projects that are in the research and development stage in different communities throughout Alaska. But more information on that would be better suited in a follow-up email.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess having once carried a bill for a boss that designated a bunch of funding for something it's not going to today, I love the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, but. The question, I guess, would get back to sort of the general applicability of this directional drilling under lands that are otherwise not open for oil and gas leasing. Is it, Director, your sense that, my mind is going back to parks and some of the marine parks we have that include both surface and subsurface waters. Is it your sense that if we pass this, we wouldn't have to worry about some of the incompatible use restrictions? I'm thinking about noise. I'm thinking about light. I'm thinking about, you know, the things that are associated with industrial developments, which we need to get oil and gas. Would this then sort of supersede some of those state management plans for those parks or other special areas?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. That's an excellent question. So we do have, as a part of the formal lease contract, what's embedded in there is all of the regulatory authority and protections. So we have mitigation measures. We have other authorizations that dictate how development may occur in a particular area. And so none of those plans or any other sorts of agreements that have been set out would be set aside by this bill in any way. We continue to do resource development successfully and safely through the state in areas where there are other management plans, and through the best interest finding process, as well as the mitigation measures of the specific lease. We do address those and ensure that those aspects that you brought up in terms of noise or light are under consideration and only authorized in a manner that is compatible with that through a plan of operations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you again, Ms. Payne. At this time, I'd like to open public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Anyone on the telephone who wishes to testify on SB 62? All right, I encourage folks to submit your written testimony to our email address, SRES@akleg.gov. We're going to close public testimony. All right, public testimony is closed. We're going to wrap up today's Senate Resources meeting. I want to again thank all the presenters for taking the time to be here to answer our questions and walk us through this stuff. We really appreciate you. Our next meeting will be held on Friday, March 12th, and we're going to take up SJR 8, the completion of university land grants. Now, this meeting is now adjourned at 4:24 p.m.